Welcome to another Postal Podcast. I'm Gene Del Polito, and we're doing it today at the National Postal Museum. And I've got three very interesting guests with me today who I'm going to ask to introduce themselves and tell you who they are and what they do.
Well, good morning, Gene, and thank you for coming to the museum today. My name is Alan Kane, and I'm the director of the Postal Museum.
Good morning. I'm Marty Emery. I'm the manager of public relations and internet affairs here at the National Postal Museum.
Good morning. I'm Karen McCormick, and I'm the project manager on a new program at the museum that we're going to talk about today with Gene. Thank you.
A couple of years ago, I served on the advisory committee that you had put together, and I remember back then what the museum looked like. And I can honestly tell you, when I go out there today, it doesn't look anything like what it did. In fact, it's a lot larger. There's more there. But why don't you talk a little bit about what is the museum? What is it all about? What is it intended to do?
The museum actually is sort of evolving. We are one of 19 Smithsonian museums. And our museum really focuses on the story of the Postal Service. Postal Service, as you know, has been in business for about 239 years, and there's a lot of stories to tell. And we also focus on stamps, postage stamps. The images on the stamps are really history and education, and they tell the story of America. They tell the story of America's heroes, America's heritage, America's history. So we use exhibits and programs to promote that material.
But what other kinds of things do you have here when in telling the story? What else tells the story?
Well, we use exhibits, and there's a vast amount to see here, both stamps and postal history and postal technology and transportation. We also do educational programs. Well, in 2015, we're targeting 3,000 school kids to come through the museum. And we use our material, objects, our exhibits to teach kids about America's history, about what's shown on stamps.
How do they react?
Very well. We do. We're now doing quarterly satisfaction studies on our visitors. Last year we did it yearly, but we switched to quarterly. We're hitting high marks. We're hitting high marks on every indicator in there. About 85% of the people tested last year said they'd make a return visit.
What turns on a kid when he comes to the museum?
What really turns on kids nowadays is technology and interactives. They like to do things. They like to do things with their hands. Mm-hmm. It's fine to read on the wall about objects and to see it. You got to do that. People love to see rare things. But you got to combine the use of new technologies to really make it work for the kids nowadays.
From the adult side, who typically comes in?
About 30% of our visitors is stamp collectors. Another 30% are postal employees and retirees, and the last 40% are what I'll call the general public. 52% of our visitors are women, 48% are men, and they're very smart. Many of our visitors, more than half, have BAs and MBAs. So it's a fairly bright basis that we have coming through as visitors. The average age for a visitor in this museum is 42 years old.
Oh, so it's not just people who only remember stamps from when they were young. These are people who actually have a little bit longer or a different kind of a history associated with it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. As I say, we're going to have 3,000 school kids go through here and families with kids go through here, but the predominant visitorship comes from adults at this point.
Now, you're right across the street from the Union Station. Does that help in terms of bringing people on over?
Union Station gets about 35 million people that go through there a year. I would say, and I can't give you numbers, I would say a portion of them while they're waiting for trains come here.
The place has changed a great deal. Could you talk a little bit about what it has evolved into from the early days?
It's changed dramatically from the early days. Let me start with our stamp side. When I got here in late 2002, the only thing we were showing on stamps were school kids' drawings of stamps. That was the only exhibit. The philately world was up in arms. They were livid that we weren't showing anything of our rare material. A year ago, we opened up the William H. Gross Stamp Gallery, the largest stamp gallery in the world. About 25,000 objects in that gallery. To give you a frame of reference, the new 9/11 Museum in New York has 10,000 objects. Mm-hmm. This gallery has 2.5 times as many as the 9/11 Museum. Some of the greatest stuff you'd ever want to see when you get over here, and it's really wowing the philately world and the general public at the same time. That's contributing to our 27% increase in walk-in visitors, quite frankly. And on the postal side, we've done a lot of new exhibits. We keep rotating exhibits in the atrium. We put up a new technology exhibit. We put up an inspection service exhibit, a military exhibit, on and on and on. So we're rotating many new exhibits through our museum, which is really important to keep it fresh, and that's what the visitors want to see.
Karen, I know there's a new project that's just about ready to get underway.
We've started a new project we've been working on over the last year, which is to tell the history of the mailing industry to the general public. We want to be the preeminent place that people would go to find out anything that has to do with the mailing industry. The industry itself is kind of a silent industry. It's almost invisible in a way. We don't realize the significant contributions that the mailing industry has made to the growth of our nation. It's actually hard to think about what it would be like if we didn't have the mailing industry. We'd have no letters, no newspapers, no catalogs, no magazines.
You're making reference to this thing called the mailing industry. What is it?
The mailing industry, we have found by going out and talking to people, we've been able to define what we believe the mailing industry is. And it is a partnership between the United States Postal Service and private enterprise, which uses the Postal Service's network over 200 years to provide services to the American public for communication and commerce needs.
We talk about the industry, and you're talking about these people being at work on it. What one of the parts that they end up doing is they help other businesses tell their stories and talk to their customers?
Yes, definitely.
Can you give me some examples?
Well, in the nonprofit world, charitable giving, the nonprofits use direct mail constantly to be able to do fundraising, mm-hmm. to bring money in, and to be able also to drive people to go to their websites or go to different events.
And Marty, could you tell me a little bit about how is this story going to be told?
We're going to do two things. We're going to start first with building an online environment, so a website, if you will, to capture the stories, the information about the mailing industry that really hasn't found its way into one location as yet. Our plans down the road are to have a rotating physical exhibit in our exhibit spaces here at the museum, where we will probably rotate stories on maybe an annual basis, and we'll decide what makes sense, what stories to tell based on the information that we've received from the industry, whether it's on an industry segment itself, or maybe on big topics like civics or democracy, the environment, the economy, commerce, communication. It's a little known fact that the mailing industry is a big driver in all those kinds of areas.
Now, when you're talking about telling the story, who's going to be included in the story?
We started working with a steering group, and we defined the mailing industry and then broke it up into segments. It's a very, very large group of people. So we came up with, at least right now, 12 specific industry segments. And we actually have a slide that you can refer to. It's a nice colorful pie chart. And that is the prototype right now of the website. And you can see the different industry segments, from logistics to list brokers, newspapers. So we've created those segments. And the next step is to actually seek out people in those individual segments and get their stories. There's another slide that we show on the envelope manufacturing. That's a representation of, from the big pie chart, if you click on one of those segments, and down at the bottom of the slide, you'll see the different story categories that we're going to be collecting information. And we're going to start with an overview of each of the segments so people understand, in this case, what is envelope manufacturing all about.
That pie chart, you got a number of different subunits to it. If I click on it, it's going to bring up another series of slides or stories about a particular segment of the industry?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, interestingly, we decided to go with a pie chart because no segment is really more important than the other. There's no start, there's no finish. So we went with a circle. And you're right, each segment's going to be color-coded. So as you dig deeper and learn more about each of those industry segments, you'll stay within the color scheme.
Okay, now we talked about the segments, and chances are people have an opportunity to look at the slide to see what they are, but why don't you tell me what the segments are as of this moment?
Sure. I'll just kind of start at the top right here. Letter and mail shops is one segment. Fulfillment and package services. We have list brokers, data processing, and software. It's a big segment, a lot of different players. Envelope manufacturing, newspapers and magazines, catalogs and mail order, printing, forestry and paper, equipment manufacturing, direct mail marketing, ad agencies and designers is a segment, large transactional mailers, and logistics.
You know, Karen, this gets you back to your point, and that is that it's an industry, it's multivaried. And obviously, a lot of people have no idea of what the individual components of it are that are all part of using mail as a vehicle for business.
Correct, Gene. The overlapping has been amazing. As I've started to talk to different people, we've gone out to different associations that are represented within each of these different segments that Marty mentioned, and each one needs the other one in order to be able to be part of the mailing industry. And again, always too, the Postal Service is at the middle, at the focus. We all interact with the Postal Service, the industries, and we also all interact with each other. One person brought up, for instance, that a letter shop cannot survive if the envelope manufacturer makes bad envelopes. And the envelope manufacturer brought up that they need to get good paper in.
Actually, I remember when Lee Epstein was telling the world that the letter shop would never go anywhere if it didn't make good rubber bands.
From the Postal Service, right.
We'll be moving into other activities around the mailing industry program as we start to generate this thing. We'll be doing lectures about the mailing industry. We'll be doing seminars. We'll be doing publications, podcasts, such as what we're doing here right now, and so on, to try to tell the world about what we're doing. Our educational team will be putting curricula together for families and school kids, and they'll be doing problem solving. So, for example, if you want to send a letter from Washington to California, what's the role of the mailing industry in making that happen, and how does that interface with the Postal Service? And those are games that they'll put together for kids to learn. In addition to the website and the rotating gallery, there'll be a lot of other support activities that'll be put together.
You know, I'm a person who has to represent the industry here in Washington, and I can honestly tell you, it seems like it's a never-ending story to have to go up to Capitol Hill and try to explain to them what is the mailing industry. Most people up there know no more about mail than affixing a stamp to an envelope, and they have absolutely no idea what goes on behind it, in spite of the fact that everybody up on Capitol Hill is so heavily dependent upon mail to be able to communicate with their own constituents. But they never really give that much of a thought. Now, you've talked about a steering group that has gotten together to talk about this particular thing. What's been the general reaction you've gotten from the people that you've had to work with on this steering group? What do they think of the idea?
Everyone is enthusiastic about it. The steering committee is made up of, again, the association heads, and we have some other key players that are part of the industry. We've gone out to different groups and met with them. We've met with the Postcom Board, we've met with the Parcel Shippers Board, we've gone to MTAC, we've also obviously gone to different folks at the Postal Service, and everybody says this is a great story. And initially we're going out, as Marty mentioned, and we're getting some of the pioneer stories, and we're getting the leaders from each of these different industry segments. But we do have a phase two that we will have at some point where we want to hear everybody's story. And there's 8.4 million people in the mailing industry, so that's a lot of stories.
How many people?
8.4 million.
Well, it's over $1 trillion industry, if that's the question.
That is the question.
Yeah, it's over $1 trillion a year industry. It's huge. Actually, Gene, that's one of the reasons we waited so long. I've personally wanted to kind of attack this project for several years. couple of problems. One, we were sidetracked. We had so much going on the stamp gallery that we built, and we never really had the resources in the museum to make it work. And I couldn't figure out how to get my arms around something so huge as a $1 trillion industry, the stories involved, and all the players, the companies, and so on. We finally figured it out organizationally how to approach it, and I'm pretty sure this is going to work very well. But I guess I'd like to add one thing to what Karen said on the question of what was the opinions in the of the project and all the places we went. What struck me really interesting was we've gone to many association board meetings, MTAC, you name it, talked to a lot of people, and at the end of our presentation, I asked one question: do you want us to do this, yes or no? I don't want to embark on this thing if the industry is not interested. And quite frankly, I do not remember after all of these presentations anybody saying no. Anybody. It was very enthusiastic.
Okay, you've told me about the industry reaction. What about when you posed the idea or the question to the Postal Service? What's
that
reaction?
We also briefed the Postal Service and the Smithsonian, which we have to do. And the Smithsonian was fine. Postal Service had a couple of questions, which I clarified later on with the Postmaster General, and he was way behind it also after we worked out a couple of bugs in the thing. So overall, it's looking pretty good right now.
Okay, when we talk about getting the information together and the exhibits and so on, where's the stuff going to be housed?
We're going to start with the online version. So we're going to have a repository of information that resides on a Smithsonian server. And these story categories that I referred to earlier, we're a history museum, so we kind of start from the beginning. And we collect stories and information on pioneers and early adopters in each of these industry segments. We identify the industry leaders of yesterday and today. We also ask people in those particular segments to surface for us historical artifacts that they may have in their possession, where in the online version we can have videos or photographs along with gathering the information on those particular artifacts, which might come into play when we do the physical exhibit.
So you're actually reaching out and asking the industry to play a role in helping put the exhibit together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is really their story. We're going to figure out the best way to present it and tell the story to the American public and other audiences. And by the way, I said we're a history museum. Part of our charge is to also tell the unfolding history. So one story category we have available for each of the segments we call State of the Industry and Future Outlook. So this is where we're asking not only for the things in the past, but also what's going on today and what do they see the future looking like in each of these segments.
Well, I can't tell you how important that is, because when you talk to some people up on Capitol Hill, they think about how they all do everything with their phones and their computers, and they think mail is just going to go away, and that's not the case.
No, absolutely not. The Postal Service is here for a long time to come, and it's been evolving for several hundred years and has gone through a lot of bifurcations along the way. So maybe we're in one of those periods right now. But earlier, you talked about constituents on the Hill and so forth, and people in the mailing industry always have to constantly educate people about the mailing industry. I can tell you, when we started this project, I went to Google, like a lot of people do, and I Googled mailing industry. There will be about 4 million entries come up, and not one of them even begins to tell a comprehensive, thoughtful story about what this thing is. So I think it's a role that is long overdue, and we're happy to step up to the plate and tell that story.
Well, like I tell you, I've been in this industry for over 30 years, and my mother still has no idea what I do. And it's an endless story to try to explain to her and to all of the people in her senior citizens facility what it is that I do. And it's amazing. When you start talking about it, they have no idea that everything that they get in their mailboxes actually has a genesis and a story associated with it that's a lot more complex. Now, you talked about being a historical facility. How are you going to reach out to let people know that this is there? What sort of educational outreach are you going to be making to get people interested to want to come on in and learn about that story, or to visit the site and learn about that story?
I think that's a great question. It's a critical question. Once we get rolling and start to get the content into the website, we have a huge PR job to tell everybody it exists. One thing to kind of almost think about is we get, say, 3 million people hitting into our website. If you take all the companies involved in the mailing industry and those that would be highlighted in this website and how many people hit into their websites, all the visitors they have, and combine that together, how many hundreds of millions of people have the opportunity to see it just without PR or PR just on the site? But what we're going to do, what we agreed with the steering committee, is we're going to put a team together from the industry segments and the steering committee along with Marty, and they're going to build a PR game plan, an integrated game plan where everybody has a chance to kind of put it together. And we're then going to go out and use that game plan to tell the world what we're doing and where they should hit on and so on. We've been doing it kind of unilaterally from the museum point of view. We've got a number of articles going out, but this really has to be a bigger show as we evolve.
Now, you talked about the website. I run a website. It's a very static website. I believe in words. I have no capability of thinking in pictures. When they go to your website, what are they going to experience?
Yeah, so I think the first thing I'd point to is the fact that we're building what's referred to as a responsively designed site. So instead of being a static site that has fixed pixel width, whether you're on a desktop, a tablet, your smartphone, the website will automatically size to the screen device that you're looking at. So everyone will be able to have a great view of the site and the content. It's going to be extremely user-friendly. We're setting up a menu tree that allows you in one click to go very deeply into the website if you know exactly what you're looking for, or logical kind of ways for you to go through the site depending on whether you're interested in a particular segment, whether you're interested in research in general, whether it's the big topics you want to learn about how the mailing industry, you know, supports and actually frames our economy or commerce or communication. So we're kind of looking at it kind of as a Rubik's Cube kind of thing.
Okay, they can click on it and so on. But is the story going to be one in which all I'm going to be seeing is a series of slides, or is there going to be a part of the story that's actually going to come alive?
Yeah, this is going to be very multimedia. So what we're asking the storytellers for is both textual stories, high-res photographs, videos of things that have gone on in the industry that are important either from a historical standpoint or that are going on today. We'll also have the ability for people, if they just like to look at videos, so the YouTube kind of people out there, we'll be able to offer up all of the video stories in one click and bring that forward. If you like to look at photographs, we'll have that option as well.
How will this integrate with the other really beautiful part of your site, Arago?
So we have two websites here. We have our main website, which has all the information about our exhibits and our public programs, our calendar events, and so forth. And then we also have something we call Arago, which you just referred to. That's our collections database. That's where we have about 30,000 of our best objects with curated stories, very high resolution images, and so forth. We will incorporate this site into our main website, but where there is context for linking to one of those 30,000 stories because it supports what we're saying in this mailing industry website, we'll have context-specific hyperlinks to take you out to Arago and back in.
When we talk about the site, so far we've been talking about the electronic side of it, but Marty had mentioned earlier the fact that there's going to be exhibits. What are the exhibits going to be about?
It's not going to be, we can't put an exhibit up on the 12 segments. It's got to be something different. It's got to tell more of a complete story than one segment. So, for example, Marty used the example of democracy. How has democracy evolved over the last couple hundred years, fostered by the Postal Service and the mailing industry? That's a really great topic for the general public to see in one of these exhibits. So what we're going to do is take larger topics than just a segment that crosses many segments, and we're going to highlight that in a walk-in exhibit on the in the atrium level on the museum floor. And when you do something like that, you hire a designer, as you do a lot of marketing research, you want to find out what the general public is interested in seeing. And the end product will be something, I hope, very exciting that tells the story, that uses technology, interactives, and new technology that excites the public and the kids as we go down the future.
Okay, his pie chart has a number of different pieces to that pie. How do you make the decision as to what exhibit is being shown, or for how long is the exhibit going
to
be shown?
Yeah, as I say, you got to, what do you show could be, say, four or five topics for several years. It could be changing topics every year. We're not at that stage yet. But the key is research. If Marty puts 10 major topics on his website, we'll take a look at how many people hit in on those topics, and you'll see very shortly what the most interesting topics would be. We would also do research for the people that are going through the museum and ask them what they think. And that's the way we go about setting it up. And then we give that information to the designers, and they lay it all out. And they'll be working with the steering committee and the industry to put it all together, and our exhibitors and curators. How long it'll be up, it'll be a permanent exhibit. Permanent meaning at least 20 years. The question on the table now, which we're not up to yet, is, once again, do we rotate the topics? Depending on how many topics we want to show, we can rotate them as often as we want, or do we just stick with one set of topics? For example, upstairs in the Gross Gallery, we have what's called the Rotating Gallery. Every year, we put a new collection up, a new set of objects up, because that's what the public wants to see. So we have to make that decision as we go forward.
What is the current state of this thing that we're talking about today?
Well, I've been spending my time working with the associations trying to get the content that Marty needs for his website. So it's really important that we get the stories.
So you're reaching out to those individual segments. Yes. And the people that know those segments.
Correct. And what I'm also finding is that a lot of the associations have people that are retired from the industry. And we're finding that this is a great group to go to help us write the overview, the history of the industry segment, as well as to get the pioneers, where we might locate historical artifacts. A lot of these folks have the actual written history that they've actually put together themselves of what they've done over their lives. People in the mailing industry tend to stay in it for a long time.
So you're actually looking for volunteers, and if there happen to be people who are listening to this podcast now that believe that they have a part of a story to tell, you're asking them to come forward and talk with you about it.
That would be super.
Yeah. In addition, if anybody who's listening to the podcast have stories they would like to tell, that think they have meaningful stories, they should contact Karen, who will put them in contact with the people that are managing that segment. And you can get Karen at the following telephone number.
Actually, I'll give you my email address, which is McCormick, McCormick, at si.edu.
Okay, and we'll have links to this among the slides that we end up putting up along with the podcast so that people can make reference to it. It's wonderful. But as with all things in life, this is going to cost. What's the plan on how to pay for what it is that we are talking about doing?
It's going to cost in probably two arenas right now. One, putting the website together, and the other, the rotating gallery. The website is not expensive, and we've basically have enough money to set that up right now with the donations we've received. Moving ahead down the road to the rotating gallery will be a little more expensive, especially if you use the technology that really excites the public. I think the strategy behind that is to kind of locate a number of individuals who might want to sort of have a legacy around that rotating gallery?
That's a good point, because what a lot of people don't understand is a lot of the businesses that grew up in this industry were family businesses. Somebody started the business, somebody still owns the business, has a stake in the business.
Yeah, and let me give you an example. As I mentioned, we put up the world's largest stamp gallery. It cost $19 million. Now, this is not going to be anywhere near that. But we ended up with 450 donors to that gallery, 450 donors. And why did they donate? Well, it's a passion and a hobby, but most importantly, it's a legacy. They want their name on a Smithsonian gallery forever. They want to be recognized, and if they have the resources, it's a great place to do that. So if you use that strategy, and we get a list of those folks in the industry that fall into that category of wanting a legacy, that's where I think the funds will come to build a rotating gallery.
Yeah, you know, immediately what comes to mind is the Quadracci family in printing, the Donnelly family in printing, and a lot of people don't know this, but Lillian Vernon actually started her business at her kitchen table, and her two sons were involved in it all along the way. Fred, her younger son, actually was on our board of directors over at the Association for Postal Commerce for several years. Fred has now moved on, and Fred was the deputy administrator of the Small Business Administration under the Clinton administration, and he's now the president of the United States Export-Import Bank. So the people that we're talking about don't have a story that just begins and dies within this industry. These are people who actually gone on with other facets of their life.
Yeah, these are the type of people that we'd be talking to in the future that I think might want to create a legacy for themselves, their families, their companies, by supporting an exhibit at the Smithsonian Postal Museum.
If there's a message you would want to convey to our people at this particular point in time, what would it be?
Look, in my mind, this is a biggie. This is a huge, huge story. It's never been told before. And in my travels, people don't have a clue. Don't have a clue about the mailing industry. And quite honestly, I hate to say this, people in the mailing industry don't realize how big you are and what you actually do. They may know one part of it. They don't know the whole thing. This is an opportunity for history to tell this story to millions and millions of people over a huge amount of years at a Smithsonian institution, and I'm not sure this opportunity will ever come again, so this is one I want to make work and take advantage of. And as Karen said, where we are right now is we're at the stage that Marty is putting together a website. We're moving strongly. We got a great steering committee. We now have to get the content into the website, get it going, and then PR game plan and move on to the rotating exhibit and all the support activities.
Look, I really appreciate your taking the time to begin telling the story about what is about to happen. If anybody's listening to this, I could tell you this is not going to be the last time you're going to hear about this story. We're going to do a series of podcasts associated with various segments of the industry as this project moves along. But I can tell you for sure that there is no other place in the world that I know of, and I've even been to the Russian Museum over in St. Petersburg, that even begins to try to tell the story of all the components that are associated with the use of mail as a vehicle for communication and commerce. And I don't even think the British Museum has it. So we're talking about doing something here in the United States, which truly is going to be a model for the world. We're all familiar with the idea that there may be about 600,000, 700,000 people who work for the Postal Service, but how many people actually know that there is a substantially greater population of people that are actually behind it that really makes it all work? I want to thank you all. And in the event that someone has questions that they might want to get in touch with either one of you, Alan, how could they get in touch with you?
Email is the easiest way. Kane, A as in Alan, at SISmithsonianInstitution.edu.
Okay, and if there's someone who's interested in wanting to know a little bit more about how to participate on the funding side or whatever, who at the museum would they contact?
Contact me.
Okay, and Marty, if people are interested specifically in what you're doing relative to the development of the website, how would they get hold of you?
Sure, so my email address is emerym, so it's emerym@si.edu.
Okay, and for us who may be digitally challenged and want to get somebody on the phone, where do they call?
Call 202-633-5500 and ask for Karen.
Okay, very good. Thank you again. And we'll be back with the continuing story of what this industry is really all about.